Blog Talk Radio.
Paperback writer.
Writer's Lounge, where we showcase new authors. This is show number 93, and today's date is July 12, 2021. Today's special guest author is Rachel Martin, the author of Anonymity, and she'll be on shortly with us. And I am your host, Tom Rydell. A brief intro to what we are here at the Writer's Lounge is where you can find us is over at Facebook, the Writer's Lounge Showcasing New Authors. Find the book reviews of all of our current shows over at thomasrydell.net. That's Thomas, thomasrydell.net. And the on-demand shows can be found there on the podcast page, as well as or go over to the blog cross. Can't Talk Right, the Blog Talk Radio site, and search for the Writer's Lounge there. You can find me on Twitter at TomRydell56, and our email is writerslounge2020@yahoo.com. If you want to be on the show and have your book reviewed, put guest request in the subject line, and we'll get back to you. Special note, we can also now be heard on your Alexa device. Subscribe to TuneIn and ask her to play the Writer's Lounge Showcasing New Authors. I'd also like to put in a plug for Goodreads and Reads eDiscovery. They both do a lot to help authors and readers alike, and I also review books on both their sites as well. That wraps up the show intro, and now on to our second segment of the show, which is Writer's Topics. This showcases new authors, but we also showcase the advice and words of famous authors as well. Here is J.K. Rowling, the author of Harry Potter, with her story and advice. And after that, we'll be back to talk to Rachel.
I like reading a book where I have the sense that the author knows everything. They might not be telling me everything, but you have that confidence that the author really knows everything.
This is what I mean about pace. I have to know exactly, even though the reader might not know when everything happens. So you have the month that it's happening, so I'm getting the weather right and everything.
I reckon I must have got through 15 different alternative chapters in book one. The reasons for which I discarded each of them were they all gave too much away.
I stopped pretending to myself that I was anything other than what I was, and began to direct all my energy into finishing the only work that mattered to me.
I wasn't someone with an enormous amount, in fact, I'd say I was someone with not much self-belief at all, and yet in this one thing in my life, I believed. That was the one thing in my life. I felt I can tell a story.
I often get asked by younger readers what I would advise if you want to be a writer. This is the way I did it, so that's the only advice I can give. You've got to read as much as you possibly can, because that's the best way to recognize good writing and to learn what makes bad writing, and those are very good things. You'll probably go through a phase where you imitate your favorite writers. That's perfectly okay. That's another learning process. You resign yourself to writing lots and lots of rubbish. You just got to write that out of your system, and sooner or later you'll hit what you know you really should be doing and what is your genre. And perseverance. You've got to persevere, because it is a career with a lot of knockbacks, but the rewards are huge. I don't mean in the sense that if that's what you really want to do, to be able to do it lifelong is the best thing in the world. Very rewarding. But it's not a career for people who are easily discouraged, that's for sure. And to their parents, don't tell them it's unrealistic. Never say that. Because even if they're not published, writing is the passion of my life.
5 years, this mass of material was generated, some of which will never find its way into the book, will never need to be in the books. It's just stuff I need to know for my own pleasure, partly for my own pleasure and partly because I like reading a book where I have the sense that the author knows everything. They might not be telling me everything, but you have that confidence that the author really knows everything. You, but Hermione is an exaggeration of me. So Hermione really did come from a very deep place inside me. I was very insecure, and still am quite insecure in a lot of ways, but I was a very insecure person for longer than I like to admit. And I think writing about the time in Hermione's life that I write about, growing from childhood into womanhood, literally, because when we finish the book, she's 18. I think it brought back to me how very difficult it is. So much is expected of you as you become a woman, and often you are asked to sacrifice parts of you in becoming a girl, I would say. Hermione doesn't. She doesn't play the game, if you like.
But do you find the whole secrecy issue, the need for secrecy, a bit ridiculous?
No.
Why not?
No, not at all, because a lot of it comes from me.
Really?
Yes, definitely. I mean, of course one could be cynical, and I'm sure you would be disposed to be so, and say it was a marketing ploy. But I don't want the kids to know what's coming, because that's part of the excitement of the story. And having, you know, sweated blood to create all my red herrings and lay all my clues, to me it's not a, this is my life, it's not my life, but it is a very important part of my life.
Yeah. We've mentioned teenagers several times.
Yeah.
Same thing is true with Harry Potter. What is it about teenagers?
Do you think it's arrested development in me?
Know.
I don't know.
Well, I do know that you said that your teenage years were not that happy for you.
I love, Stephen King said, if you enjoyed being a teenager, there's something really wrong with you. And that really struck me here. I mean, I.
So a happy teenager could not write a book like this?
No.
Or like Stephen King?
No. No, definitely not.
Well,
actually, I think the urge to write often comes from a wish to rearrange reality, the reality you're in. So I don't think I've ever met a writer.
But is it easy to make it a fantasy or to make it a real village that has real
people? To me, there's honestly not much difference. There's truly not much difference, and they're very different kinds of book. But for me, what obsesses me, morality, mortality, that was...
Those two things most of all.
Absolutely.
They run through everything you do.
They run through Harry Potter completely. They run through this. I probably will never be able to...
Mortality and morality.
A very close friend of mine, I finished the book, and the first thing he said to me was, how many people die? He knows me so well.
Because he knows you.
Yeah, exactly. But no, to go back to the teenager's point you raised, I think that I am fascinated by people who are on the cusp of adulthood. It's such an interesting time of life. I think most of us would say that we, it's another very formative period in everyone's life.
It's rebellion,
life,
it's unformed. It's...
But you're also very vulnerable, and these characters are vulnerable in
their different ways. And looking for identification.
Absolutely. But also, which is an interesting thing about adolescence, is often much more concerned with the big issues of life than the people in middle age, like me, who are struggling with the minutiae of everyday life. We all get bogged down in that to an extent.
They are concerned with the essence of life, which is relationships and love and
fear. Well, one teenage boy asks another in this book, what matters? And the answer is sex and death. And then, as an afterthought, music. Now, none of the adult characters are having that conversation. This is not...
They're worried about...
Yeah, they're worried about paying the bills. She's one of the amazing and wonderful things about literature, as about film and music, is it's utterly subjective. So that's the point of it. You know, that's the point. Of course, you move in that world. If you expect to just stand under a shower of perpetual praise, there's something wrong with you.
Exactly right.
That, you know, you will get criticism. I knew that going in. And the funny thing is, I'm not a particularly, I was never a very confident person in areas in my life in which I'm very thin-skinned. But not in this area. In this area, I think it's right and proper. I should be criticized, and that's
And can
literature.
You learn from it?
Yeah, sometimes, absolutely. It depends. I mean, there have been reviews that have, I thought, yeah, that's fair comment, and I need to take that on board.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, of course. Failure meant a stripping away of the inessential. I stopped pretending to myself that I was anything other than what I was, and began to direct all my energy into finishing the only work that mattered to me. Had I really succeeded at anything else, I might never have found the determination to succeed in the one arena where I believed I truly belonged. I was set free because my greatest fear had been realized, and I was still alive, and I still had a daughter whom I adored, and I had an old typewriter and a big idea. And so rock bottom became the solid foundation on which I rebuilt my life. You might never fail on the scale I did, but some failure in life is inevitable. It is impossible to live without failing at something, unless you live so cautiously that you might as well not have lived at all, in which case you fail by default.
Well, there you go. I hope you enjoyed that little clip from J.K. Rowling, the author of Harry Potter. And now on to the main event. Is our author today is Rachel Martin, and she wrote Anonymity. And a synopsis of that book from Amazon. Until now, expert brain surgeon Abel Rhodes has been shackled by society's expectations. After all, functioning psychopath doesn't fit neatly into the cover life he's created, or into one his wife, adopted child, or colleagues would understand. For the first time, he wakes with a feeling. Abel's sanctuary, a brilliant hideaway built with his own two hands, serves as the backdrop to quench his cravings for justice by execution. Glorious? Yes, but this isn't enough. His growing angst toward a rotting society of the internets entitled, while savvy societies watch and wait to devour our ignorance, must be rectified. Abel requires absolute anonymity in his quest. What he's in need of most is a captain, his captive, to be the face of said movement. Once he finds one who is all he could have hoped for, and then some, can Abel successfully accomplish his mission and indulge in his carnal fetishes? Or will she destroy his world? In my review, I wrote, reviewers often say about a good book, I couldn't put it down, but I only put this book down twice and went without lunch because I was hungrier for more of the story than I was for food. Keep an eye on this author, Rachel Martin. She has an impressive literary talent in crafting her words, and her attention to story plot and character development will easily land her on the bestsellers list if she keeps going as a writer. And now it is my pleasure to welcome Rachel Martin to the Writer's Lounge broadcast. And this time, I hope, our technology is working And we'll bring Rachel on right now. Rachel, can you hear me?
I can hear you. So
all
nice
right.
to be on with you,
finally
Thomas.
Worked.
Thanks for having me.
Well, nice to have you. And I absolutely loved your book. We've done a little talk offline, as it were, for quite a long time, talking about the insights of your book and that amazing writing that you do is definitely on my top shelf, and it probably will not come down from the top shelf for a very long time. But anyways, let's get into the questioning here. From my understanding, this is your first attempt at a published novel, and in my opinion, it already deserves a place on any one of a number of bestseller lists. What or who inspired you to be a writer, and did anything frighten you away from writing? Anonymity, since it is filled with extreme emotional content, as we already know.
Yes. Okay, so I was inspired to be a writer from the time I was about in the fifth grade, but I'm just going to be perfectly honest. I was afraid of that old saying, starving artist. So it kept me from it for quite a long time. I would write excerpts of things, songs, poetry, what have you, and nothing ever saw the light of day until finally I decided to start Anonymity. And probably having people in my life, because I came from a Christian background, which, you know, for them, this is cringy. They can't really read it because there are certain yeah. things about it that are just too much for them. So anyway, does that answer your question, Thomas?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm interested in that part of the story of your writing career. You seem to sort of gone out on a branch that may have been too far for you to go out on in some people's mind. And I find it refreshing for you as a writer, because there's a lot of people who sit down to write a book who constantly question whether their audience is going to like their works in relationship to what you just mentioned. You have friends and mm-hmm. family that are in the you know, church, going to church. Well, this book probably isn't going to be for them, obviously, but it takes a lot of courage to do what you did.
Thank you. Well, I definitely stretched. And, you know, when you're inspired to write something, it's just kind of hard to curb it, because you know it's not going to be the best thing that you could possibly write. You know, I was coming out of a restaurant with my husband one night, and I think the thing that really got me going on this particular story was just asking a what-if question. We were talking about all the people on the Internet who so freely share their world and what have you, whether it's their day or what they do. And I said, you know, what if there's somebody out there that is a bit insane but highly intelligent, who has had enough of that and who decides to do something about it? What would that look like? And then I started asking all the other questions, not just the what if, but the who, what, where, when, why, how. And the ball just rolled from there. I got up the next morning and I had my second chapter, which I thought was my first at the time, and I read it to my husband, woke him up in the morning to read it to him. And then I wrote the first chapter actually came at the very end of the book. That's when I wrote that one.
Wow, that's really cool. In my full published review of your book, I mentioned in reference to a book that Mary Stout wrote years ago about sociopaths called The Sociopath Next Door. Have you had any experiences with a sociopath like your main character, Abel Rhodes? And did you research on sociopaths or abnormal human behavior?
You know, I have had someone in my past who I thought was very possibly a sociopath, and that had me wondering what the difference between a sociopath and a psychopath was. So I did do extensive research on that because I wanted to know if there was something medically different about them, and there definitely is. And it's in the book. I at first had it too much of it in there, and then I thought, no, this is going to bore the audience. I need to just make it kind of clear in a few sentences, so they go, oh, wow, I didn't know that, you know. But, yes, I definitely did a lot of research, even asked an aunt of mine who was a psychologist, and she did not know. So,
wow. And it's really scary when you find one of these people in your own life that's right next door, to make that comparison to what Mary Stout wrote in The Sociopath Next Door. That's really scary and too close for comfort. And I actually have sociopaths in my life, very close. A family member is a sociopath. And when you find that out, it kind of flips you. But what was it like to create those characters in your book? Do you picture them in your mind's eye? And who has more control over how the story goes? Is it the whim of the character, or do they go along, or is it the strict and disciplined outline from you as a writer?
I am not an outliner. I would like to proudly say that I am an outliner, because it would make me seem very intelligent and very organized. And uh-huh. I'm even trying to make myself be that for the second book. The closest thing I can come to that is storyboarding, but no, I definitely am considered a pantser. I just sit down and I do put my ear pods in, and I have some kind of ominous tracks that I've put together, not many words, just music, and it just leads me down the path. I actually become my characters, which, you know, becoming Abel Rose is slightly scary, but, you know, I have to become him to really write him, because he's highly intelligent, far more intelligent than I. And, you know, and then the other ones are, in a way, a little bit more of a reach. The other main character is. But anyway, I won't give too much away. She's had her troubles, so things that I don't have much experience with. So that one was a little bit more of a reach. But, yes, I do actually become my characters.
I'd like to do a poll sometime to see how many authors out there actually use outlines. I know that James Patterson, who I studied under, uses outlines, and when he teaches, that's what he teaches. But I would guess that the majority of writers, I know Stephen King doesn't use outlines. He lets it flow. And I think in my opinion, that's a better way to go. Because you don't want to constrict your, you know, you don't want to constrict the characters or the plot so tightly that it can't come out of the box. You know what I'm saying?
I do. It actually slows me down. I know it's supposed to be something that you do to save time, but for me, I get stunted when I try to outline. I overthink, and I don't. It just doesn't flow through me the same way. So. You know, when I'm doing something else, driving, taking a shower, whatever, I get inspiration, and I can't wait to get to the pen and paper and write, you know, take a few notes, or the computer, because it doesn't always come as I'm writing, but I'm a lot quicker, a quicker writer that way than I am actually trying to sit down and make an outline.
Right. I am, as a writer, kind of obsessed by reviews. I like the good ones, and I have to look at the bad ones. But I've been on Amazon, and I've looked at your reviews. How do you handle and react to reviews as a writer, the good and the bad?
Well, I mean, anytime you get a bad review, the first thing you think of is, okay, what part of the story were they talking about? Where was that not? Where was it slow for them, or where was it this or that? You know what I mean? However they're describing it. So you try to overanalyze it, I think. Good reviews are great, and I do like feedback. I like to know where I can make an improvement. I kind of scares me a little bit that I don't have more bad reviews, and I know that sounds like I'm gloating, but I've only had a few people say things that they – and one lady I thought was going to give me a review – it didn't resonate with her. The story didn't. And so I would have been fine with her giving her review, but I was also biting my nails a little bit.
Right. Did you get any bad reviews regarding the language and the sexual content?
You know, I didn't really. I mean, I think I had one person that told me they could have done without the sexual content, but it fit in the story, and it was not gratuitous as far as I was concerned. It's not written the way an erotic writer writes the sexual
right.
scenes. Not at all. You know,
I should also
not,
mention the violence. There's a lot of violence in that book, too.
You know, and I didn't really think there was that much. I've had a few people that have actually said, thriller readers say, I wanted more gore. And I thought, well, you probably need to buy horror then, because I'm not writing horror. I'm writing thrillers. But, yes, there's some of that. But, I mean, he's a serial killer. How do I get around it, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, if you don't like that kind of thing and you decide to do a review on somebody's book, why did you pick it up in the first place? Don't you ever
exactly.
read the back cover?
Well, and there's a disclaimer down there, too. So.
Yeah, I know in my review I had to give everybody a disclaimer, but the book, you know, it just took off. And I couldn't put it down. I went without food. And who goes without food to read a story? I mean, if that doesn't tell you something, that's a lot. There's a theme.
You know
in
what?
The plot
yours was
of
one
of story.
My favorite, if not the favorite review that I had, because I love that statement.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, yeah. That was the truth. I was sitting here, and my stomach was grumbling, and I was sitting in my recliner, and I was probably in the middle of your book, and I thought, God, I can't stop reading this. And I thought, well, I'll just stop after the next sentence or the next paragraph. And then every time I did that, I thought, no, I got to go into the next and the next and the next and the next. And I just kept on going like that. There's a theme in the plot of your story that focuses on the content that is ingested on the internet that Dr. Rhodes wants to rectify. You just briefly mentioned that earlier. Can you relate mm-hmm. to his concerns? And what do you like and dislike about the internet in general?
Well, I have to admit, I'm a little bit crass when it comes to certain things that people post. And I get it. You know, we don't all like to see the same thing, but I'm never going to comment or like a picture of a dish of food, for instance, or follow somebody's journey throughout their entire day, because I've got my own day to deal with.
Right.
So there are certain things that I may sound a little bit crass about when it comes to that, but you know, that's just my own thing. I have succumbed to knowing that it's important to have some kind of presence, do some posting, and that's just the world that we live in. That's where people advertise. That's where people find things. I mean, I shop over the internet, so I can't really poo-poo social media.
Right.
But you know, I do think that there was some of Abel in me for sure, as far as that first question that I had about what if somebody exposes themselves too much on the internet, just like I'd, you know, anyway, that's pretty much all I have to say about it, I guess. But
and I guess the captain of his quest is someone who seemed to me to be a little bit flighty mm-hmm. in the way she conducted herself, but she was perfect for that part, I thought.
Well, thank you. She doesn't remain as flighty as she is there. And I don't want to give too much away, but she was definitely the perfect captain for him, for his
uh-huh.
quest.
Right.
Yeah.
Where do you see your writing going from here, say in 5 or 10 years?
Well, I would like to have at least 2 different series under my belt in 5 years. And those would be thrillers, because I think that's probably the vein that I'm most interested in. You know, I don't think that I'll really switch genres, but I do have half of another book written that I had to put down years ago, and I'll pick that one back up. It is, I guess you would call it a thriller with speculative fiction aspects to it. So I don't know if I can tie this series to that one, but it would be, I won't do it if it doesn't fit, if it's unnatural, but if when I'm through with the Anonymity series, if I could tie it into the next one, then, and I have a few ideas, it might be possible, then that's the next thing that I'll be doing.
I think you wrote about being kind of stuck in one genre, and you thought as a writer we shouldn't be held to that standard. Did you write that? I think it was you who mentioned that.
Well, yeah, I was kind of referring to it. But, I mean, sometimes I want to write something different, but I don't think it'll be so completely different. I don't see myself writing romance novels or, you know, I know they're wildly popular, and those people put out a lot of literature. They put a lot of books out. I don't see myself going that vein, and certainly not going to do children's books or something like that. Can you even imagine? But
yeah.
After writing this, and I have been informed by many people that if you're going to do another genre, you should use a different pen name. So I don't know if I would do that or not.
I don't know if I would do that either. I think that, sometimes it bothers me. We've had a couple authors on this program in the past who have used pen names, and I always ask them off air, why not your real name? Why don't you want other people to know, want your readers to know who you really are? Because mm-hmm. if they do a search on the internet, they're probably not going to find that pen name unless you're somebody famous like, Richard Bachman would be Stephen King. And
wow, yeah.
I just find that, and then the other thing about the genres, you know, why not try something else? Why not go from horror to science fiction? Why not? I mean, it's something to explore, and then eventually I think you get settled into a genre that you really like to write, but why not if you're thinking of a story that falls outside of that original genre that you wrote. So,
yeah, I mean, I could definitely see myself writing in the supernatural at some point, to some degree, because I have my own abilities in that way. So it could happen. And I mean, I have stories I could definitely tell there.
A little bit off topic here regarding your book, but what kind of abilities do you have?
Okay, well, I have kept this to myself most of my life. Only the people that are really close to me know it. Now I'm going to announce it, but I'll go ahead and do it. I have definitely seen spirits before, and uh-huh. it's happened throughout my life. I've had dreams that came true the next day. I have had visions as though it's playing out in front of me on a screen, for instance, a car wreck, and it's 5 minutes down the road, there it is, exactly how I saw it. So
Wow. Those
are just a few of the things. I definitely have a feeling, too, when there is a spirit. And I've taken a picture, well, three pictures in a row of one that was in an apartment of mine once. But it came back with me from a graveyard, and I could feel it. But anyway, I've just had these experiences, and I find it fascinating. I've never really done anything with it, but it could appear in a story, maybe not the whole thing, but it could definitely have to play a role in books for me.
Sure, and if you knew a little bit more about me, you'd know that I was a paranormal investigator.
Ah.
I've done that out in the Midwest for several years, and not so much on the East Coast here, but it's an interesting subject, and we've had a few people on the show here that have written ghost stories, which is interesting also to me. Did you give a lot of thought to going either the traditional or self-publishing route? And how is marketing going for you? That'd be rough.
Well, okay. Yeah, the marketing is kind of all over the map. I'll answer that quickly first. I've done a few things that I spent money on that I probably shouldn't have, because it's just a little bit too early for me to do that. And everybody wants to sell you something, right?
Yes.
It's not necessarily going to be something that's going to be profitable for you. But I'm looking at free things more now, classes. And, you know, a lot of times you'll get those, that free advice because they want to sell you something else at the end of it. But I'm gleaning as much as I can until I have book two ready and three rough drafted so that I'm ready to do a rapid release on those. So that's where I'm at with the marketing part of it. And it's a tough road. I'm learning. You just need to be patient when it comes to being a writer, because readers don't like to be sold. You know, they want to find things on their own, and you just have to find a way to get them to find you.
Right. And what about the traditional or self-publishing route?
Well, with the traditional, you know, there's always a little bit of, that sounds good, because maybe someone else would do the marketing for me, but that's not the case from what I've been made aware. They actually want you to do pretty much your own marketing anyway. I don't know to what degree, but I do know that they take the rights to your book, and they take a lot of creative freedom from what I've heard also. And I'm just not down with any of that. Right. You also make a lot lower percentage, but you know, maybe in the long run, if it was a great success, maybe you would be, you know, it would really skyrocket and you'd be more profitable. I'm not really sure. But from everything that I'm hearing and have other authors I've talked to, they did not make it sound appealing to me to go to the traditional route.
Right. And sometimes going the traditional means you have to meet deadlines. If you get into a good publishing house, they set deadlines up and you can't really go at your own pace. You have to go by somebody else's. And I guess editing too, with editors, did you work with an editor in your book?
I honestly did not work with an editor.
That amazes me.
Well, that's a big compliment from you. I was going to say, it probably sounds ignorant that I didn't use an editor, but you know, I had one person reading it who was helping me learn how to do KDP and how to do the self-publishing thing. And she's an author, so I, you know, asked her if she would read it, and she would read several chapters and ask me a question here. Did you mean this, or did you mean for that, da 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 da? And I would read it through her eyes then when she would ask me those questions, and then go, okay, I can make this better. So that's, and she maybe had 20 questions throughout the book. So those are the things that I did. And like a painter does, a painter's almost never finished with their painting until you take it away from them. And up to the date of publish, I was going back in because I would think of something else that would be just so cool, and it would be a foreshadow for the next book. So I better put that in there. So I was going in there and dabbling with my book until I absolutely had to hit publish.
I mean, I know professional writers that have been around 20, 30, 40 years who always go to an editor and always tell you that in order to get a good book out on the market, you have to have a good editor. Well, you don't. You don't, because I've read your book and I've read a lot of books, and, you know, you keep the eyes glued to the page just like a Stephen King does. And, That amazes me. That really did. Because I thought you did have an editor.
Wow, Thomas, that's huge accolades. You know, I mean, I've been thinking on the second one that I probably was arrogant on the first one, but I wasn't maybe aware of all the different types of editors there were, and I thought a developmental editor would change my writer's voice or try to tell me things I needed to change about the plot, and I wasn't going to do that. I wasn't down
right.
for that at all.
Right.
So then I thought, well, what else do I do besides proofreading, you know? But I thought maybe I was being arrogant. I mean, this is just, what is this called when writers have doubts like this? Is it imposter syndrome? I think that's the name for it. When you start to question yourself a little bit. So thank you very much. You're making me feel much better about not using an editor.
Yeah, I think they're always a good thing to have. You might even want to try one in the future to see, just for the hell of it, to see where they go with your book. I know they're expensive, but I would just be curious, if I was you, to see if they would make your book even better than what you did. That would just be my thought. But I frown on editors myself right now for the book that I wrote, because I didn't want anything in the book to change, like same thing with you. So there are some of us writers out there that don't want anybody else touching our baby. And yeah, that's good. When you're not writing, Rachel, what do you like to do in your free time?
Well, I have a dog and cat I spend time with, and they are characters. I read, of course, and I go to the gym and I ride a bicycle. So I'll ride 2 hours at a time on a bicycle, or I'll go to the gym and lift weights. I've always lifted weights probably since I was about 19 years old. So I just find enjoyment in it. I know that might be weird to a lot of people, but those are the main things that I do outside of reading, would just be exercise, you know?
Right. So you're going to be in the Tour de France next year, right?
Absolutely not. I ride a beach cruiser, and I don't go that fast. And it still makes my thighs burn.
What advice would you give to a writer who is looking forward to someday being a published author?
I would say don't put it off. Your someday will creep up on you. But I also would say it's never too late. To anyone that feels like they let that, you know, that bus go by or whatever, it is never too late, and you're going to write a lot of crap. I look back at some of the things that I've written that I still have in my computer, and I go, ooh, did I really write that? But, you know, just don't give up. And there's no time like the present if you're thinking about it. If I could talk to you right now, I would say, you know, even if it's just 20 or 30 minutes a day, if it makes you happy, just keep writing.
Right. Who are some of your favorite authors and movies, and why?
You know, I would definitely say Stephen King. So when you use that reference with me about him being a panther, not a outliner, that made me feel better. So he's probably one of my favorites. I like some of the older stories. Movie wise, you know, I don't watch a whole lot of movies. I watch a little bit of television at night with my husband, but you know, we often will watch house flipping shows or things that are just a complete like brain dump, if you will, because we're doing that with a house right now, and it's such misery that if I can watch somebody else's misery, it makes me feel better. Does that make me a small person?
After reading your book, your book sort of made me remember The Silence of the Lambs. Have you watched that movie?
Oh, many times.
Okay.
Yeah. Love that movie. That's another huge compliment. Thank you.
And for all the people out there who are listening to the program, I think Dr. Rhodes is much more evil than even Hannibal Lecter. So there you go. There's another little bit of script you could use in your reviews. I thought that Dr. Rhodes is a lot more scarier because he was operating as a physician while all these things were happening, whereas Hannibal Lecter was locked up behind bars. So, yeah, I liked it. I liked that movie a lot.
Yeah. Yep. Abel is definitely a man of duality, two opposite extremes. That's for sure.
Right. So we're getting near the end of the program. What's next for Rachel Martin? You mentioned a book, your second book in the series.
Yes, second book in the series, and I'll just say things are getting more complicated for Abel, and I can't say the other part of it, the other theme of it, because I'll give it away if someone hasn't read the first one, but it's taking a lot more research. I mean, I'm going down rabbit holes of research because the story doesn't take place in the same places that the first one did. There's a lot of moving around, so, you know, I want to be accurate to some degree. So anyway, that's what's going on right now. And I don't know how many books will be in this series. I know it will be at least three, but possibly four or five.
Cool. And you are toying with other genres, right?
Well, I am toying with one because it is inspired by dreams that I've had over the years, and I have them repetitively, reoccurring dreams, and they get a little bit further along each time I have them. I've got about 5-6 of these, and one day years ago I woke up and I tied them together in my head. Why this, why that? And so it has definitely inspired another series, and it's not exactly the same genre. I would say thriller, but not in the same way that Anonymity is at all.
Uh-huh. Any other parting words that you would like to share with us here in the Writer's Lounge?
Well, if you haven't read Anonymity, I hope that you will. But and leave a review, even if it's not a positive review. If you think you have something to offer me that I could use in the future, then I would love to hear it. And just thank you so much for having me on your show. I have been listening to your other shows, and they make me smile. I get a lot out of them. I think people should check it out.
We've been doing this now for almost 10 years, and I say we because I did have co-host on. I had my wife, who is deceased, do it with me back in 2011, and then I had a couple other co-hosts too, and now I'm doing it solo, but I would eventually probably like another co-host. But it's been fun doing it for all these years, and I want to continue. I've gotten some good reviews on the show, and I really thank you for being on the show. But now you could just let us know where our listeners can find you out there. I know, just go to Google probably, but where could they find you to, to check in with you on more of an intimate level, like on are you on Facebook and Twitter?
Sure, I'm on Facebook and Instagram. I am on Twitter, but I don't have much presence there, so I would say Instagram and Facebook are the main two, and it's author Rachel Martin and thriller author Rachel Martin
right.
on both of those two platforms.
Very good.
I also have a website, which is rachelmartinbooks.com, but there's not a lot of action there at this point, but you could find things there about me.
Right. Okay, Rachel. Well, I'm glad we worked out the technical difficulties then. Many know about the technical difficulties that we had, but I'm glad that worked out, and I really liked your book again, and I'm definitely going to look for number two, and I would, along with you, tell everybody, please pick up Anonymity out there wherever you can find your books, because it is one hell of a read, and give yourself time, because you're not going to be able to put it down. And you might want to cook something to have next to your book stand or your chair, because you're going to have to eat while you're reading it. So
thank you so much, Thomas.
Thank you so much. And we'll be talking to you again, Rachel.
All righty.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So there she is, Rachel Martin with Anonymity. And as I said, pick that up wherever books are sold. You'll find it. And final thoughts and intro to our next show, which is July 26, 2021 at 7 p.m. excuse me, Eastern Time. And we're going to have on Gary Friedman. He wrote Stones and Glass Houses, and this is a synopsis of the book. The intersection where truth collides with deception takes place in a hospital emergency room in Stones and Glass Houses. After 30 years of loneliness and excuses, two families are set free by the piercing alarm on a flatline monitor. As the trail of deceit unravels, five lives change forever because of the arrogance and weakness of a man who claimed to love them. Gary Friedman weaves a riveting tale that offers a bird's eye view into the complexity of humanity and love that jumps off every turn page. How will they move on from the mangled heap of lies? So with that, I'd like to say see you next time on the Writer's Lounge, where we will continue to showcase new authors, and it's where we will let the story begin. Good night.
I could write a book about the way you walk and whisper and look. I could write a preface on how we met, so the world would never forget. And the simple secret of the plot, it's just to tell you that I love you a lot.